Were you worried that your song needed good words to be a great song? Well, have no fear, everybody, because Eddie Vedder is here to show us that you don't even need words to have a great song. Welcome once again to Decomposition Podcast, where we hyperanalyze all of your favorite songs. My name is Brad, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Katie. Katie, how are you doing today?
That question is triggering.
Yeah. Well, like... let's focus on today specifically. let's not focus on how you've been since our last episode. How is today?
Today's good. I've had a really nice day. We ate delicious sandwiches.
Yeah.
We walked 5 miles with the dogs.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at Teresa's beautiful face via Zoom.
Teresa, so. How are you doing all the way from a neighboring town?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
I guess today, you know.
Today.
Today, sure. Today's good.
Today is the greatest day I've ever known. That's a lie.
That's a different
that
band.
That is a different band. Same era.
When we said today that many times, I was thinking, today.
Today!
Great song!
Oh, straight up diamond. Yeah, that is a great song. Maybe we should discuss that one instead of this one?
I love this song.
This song is fantastic.
This song is fantastic. But today we have a song, like what I like to think of as like kind of a quintessential Pearl Jam hit song. I don't know that it's my favorite of theirs. It wasn't supposed to be a hit. It turned into a hit. Wasn't even ever on an album, interestingly enough, but it is their 1992 hit song, Yellow Ledbetter. It was originally the B-side of the Jeremy single. It was recorded, it was an outtake, it was probably like a demo version from their first album, 10, and then it didn't get released on an album for, you know, another decade, give or take.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
So
I'm learning.
Yeah. Learning is great, right?
I am learning.
The teacher has become the student. This song made it all the way to number 21 on the Billboard US mainstream rock charts, number 26 on the Billboard modern rock tracks. It didn't seem to chart in any other country. This was only a hit in the United States, but I think it is like a timeless, like, bluesy rock hit song. It doesn't really go grunge. I don't know, like, honestly, when it comes to all of these, you know, early 90s grunge alternative bands, I think Pearl Jam was my favorite, and it was because they were the least, like, grungy. I feel like they were much more of like a blues rock band than they were like, say, like Nirvana or Soundgarden or something, or Alice in Chains, you know.
I feel like Pearl Jam is of its time and beyond its time. Like,
I agree. Yeah.
Because it fits in that kind of grunge category, and yet it holds up. Like,
yes.
I don't want to say anything too controversial here, but like, Nirvana doesn't really hold up for me. There's very little Nirvana that I still would want to like listen to now.
Right.
But Pearl Jam holds up.
I would rather, like, I think the Nirvana that holds up best is the Nirvana Unplugged stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, Pearl Jam, I was listening to some Pearl Jam earlier today. You know, my band covers a lot of Pearl Jam songs. They hold up. That stuff that, like, I mean, their earlier stuff, like Even Flow and Alive, sounds a lot more like 90s grunge stuff. But as they went on, it just kind of became like a rock and roll sound.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
Now, Teresa, you live in a Pearl Jam household.
You guys
are hardcore.
Well, I grew up in a Pearl Jam household. My brother is, oh God, how many years older than me is my brother Matt? Lots of years older than me. And he was really into Pearl Jam when they, you know, so like when they were coming out, I learned it from my brother Matt. And then my husband, huge Pearl Jam fan.
Right, right.
I've seen Pearl Jam a few times. I can't even remember. We were supposed to go in March.
Yeah. You've seen them live, though, is the important takeaway here.
Yes. And they're fantastic. They're so probably one of the best bands I think I've seen live.
So your husband, Mike, who always comes up on these episodes.
Good guy.
I mean, we agree. He and our other friend, the lead singer of my band, Steven, the two biggest Pearl Jam fans I've ever met in my life. And if they hear this episode, they're going to be probably like furious at just how like gobbledygook we've gotten these lyrics that don't have, like, there are not official lyrics to this song at all.
There can't be.
They aren't. Eddie Vedder evidently like ad-libbed the entire thing. Like I said, this was a demo for 10, and so like they didn't have to come up with real words for it until all of a sudden, like, oh shit, we got a real song that we gotta figure out here. Now there is a story behind the song, but like aside from a couple of like choice phrases, there's no real consistency to the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
So what's up?
I was saying that I was listening to a couple live versions
right
today, and they're different. I was like, oh, okay, now I can understand the words a little bit better. He does it clearer when he sings it live. And then I was like, no, that's nothing like anything in that's a new verse.
Right. So I also want to point out that Valente, you seem to have taken this lyric guessing. So, okay, the premise of today's episode is that each of the three of us have tried to figure out what the lyrics to this song are. Valente, I think you have taken that so much more seriously than I did. Probably a little more seriously than Katie did, but it was like you didn't want to be incorrect. And I think that you thought I had like the answer key.
I did. I thought we were gonna have like the real lyrics up that we would compare.
Nope.
Turns out there is no answer key.
Exactly. I took like one listen to this song, like pausing as I like typed down individual lines. But after I listened to it once, I was like, I'm not even going to bother like going back and listening again, because this is, like I said, perfect. So I think that from here on in, we can just assume that my lyrics that I wrote for this song are the lyrics to this song.
All right. So my method was I went three times through, the first time pausing and rewinding like very frequently, and then the second and third time making little revisions. But I don't think my revisions add any sense to what I've come up with at all. And I'll tell you, I was making a genuine effort. Like I was, I was really trying to see if there was some sense to it.
Uh-huh.
I just don't think that there is, but I'm curious. I'm curious, like, A, how our hearing was different. Like, mm-hmm. I'm curious how our brains interpreted these sounds and kind of similarities and differences there are. And I am curious to see if we can come up with like any places where we feel very confident. I think there are a few places where we can feel very confident about the words.
So what I would like to do here, because I since I typed mine up on the computer, I'm going to share my screen with the mm-hmm. two of you. And would it be all right if we used like that as like the kind of baseline? Like, we'll each read our own verses.
Yeah, we could try that. Sure.
Because it doesn't really matter, but I'm gonna do it anyway, so
I'm down. Share your screen. Brad's on Zoom. He's doing his thing. Teresa and I are sharing screens all day long.
I got technology, baby. Look at me.
It's like, you be the screen sharer today. I could use a day off.
So
Hey! I already see a similarity. I'm so excited.
You don't win. You don't win. Nobody wins this.
I didn't think it was a competition.
We don't get grades.
I'm getting excited.
Okay.
I am allowed. I got to be allowed to be excited.
Well, yeah, absolutely. The more energy, the better. So, Teresa, would you do you want to read your verse?
I was going to say, where should I stop? I'll stop where I think the...
Hey, yeah. Hey, you see there?
Okay. All right.
Which is what I wrote, by the way.
Okay. I got you. I know where to stop now. All right. Read my verse.
Go for it. Read Teresa's verse one of Yellow Ledbetter.
Okay. On a ceiling, on a voice of leather, he said, I want to leave it again. Once I saw her on a beach of weathered sand, gonna say, I want to leave it again. On a wicker, on a wizard, on a wave.
I was with you. I was like, so with you. I don't have wizard in
mind. And a gold mine I saved, and I don't want to save. And I called out again. Hannah whispered, gonna leave her carmine. And I don't want to wave a box or a bag.
Oh, right. Well, this is better than I'd hoped it would be.
I think we actually have to just each read them.
Oh, yeah, I think we do.
I think we can I go next?
Whoo, please.
There's a lot of commonality, and then we diverge at Wizard, basically.
And there was a lot going on there with, like, Eddie Vedder's, like, savings. A gold and I save, and a gold.
Yeah. There's a gold mine he saved.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to save it.
Oh, I wish I could memorize your lyrics so I would just have them in the back of my mind as I listen to other lyrics.
I'll send you a picture of them.
Very cool. Can't wait.
I love the gold mine part.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed that I didn't come up with.
Oh, boy.
Eddie Vedder saved a gold mine. Like he's an old prospector.
He was a young prospector then.
Excuse me. That's true.
My thought was that he saved a lot of money. Like, yeah. I saved a gold mine. See, I have a story in my head of what I think it is, but I don't know if we're sharing our stories.
We're not quite there yet. Let's get through lyrics, and then we can just watch the shit go off the rails.
I like that I totally missed that, you know, metaphor can exist. I was like, it's A, there's a gold mine, I'm in it, and it's a literal gold mine. Okay. It's not just like, I'm kind of rich now. All right. I'll be honest, I first had on a feeling, but then I changed it to ceiling, so I'm going to go with ceiling.
Yeah.
On a ceiling, on a voice of bitter sand, then I said, I want to leave it again. Once I saw him on a beach of weathered sand.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. That's...
I have visual proof.
Well, I didn't doubt you.
Once I saw him on a beach of weathered sand. Calling to say I want to leave it again. On a waiting, on a wasted way, yeah. And I called and I said and I go and I said and I called out again. Then I'm wasted on a leave and come, I know. I said I know and I wait on a box or a bag.
Well, there was you were saying about the commonality there. And honestly, it's shocking to me. How much overlap there was there.
Clearly we're correct.
I can't believe we both had the phrase on a beach of weathered sand.
He's actually saying. What if he's actually saying that?
I think he is. He was a surfer. Like, why wouldn't he be talking about weathered sand? Like, it makes sense.
Is he a surfer?
Yeah, Eddie Vedder loves surfing. One of the tours they did, he was like, it was after 10. It might have been the Versus or maybe even Vitology, whatever, some tour. He was like, I don't care where we go, but they have to have beaches everywhere because I need to surf every day.
All right.
Maybe he was
from California.
A beach of weathered sand. I want to hear Brad.
Do you guys want to hear the soon to be official lyrics of this song? All right, get ready. Yeah. I tried to like type out what I can only refer to as Vedder sounds. So. Ooh,
okay. I did too. I'm interested to see how you guys interpreted Vedder sounds as well.
On the ceiling, on a voice, a letter said, yeah, they said, I want to leave it again. Once I saw him on a piece of weather said, Lord, I said, I want to leave him again. On a weave and on a way said, on a way, yeah. And I go not, I said, I go now, I said, and I called out again. Damn the rayside. On a leaf of gum, no. I said, I know what to wear, the boxers or a bag.
Okay, stop it. Get out of here.
So I want to point something out here is that Google Docs did not issue one spelling mistake there. So we now have words like rayside,
rayside,
on a weave, and on a way set.
Well, Google just looked at that and they were like, I don't know.
I know. These are now words. So what do you think Eddie Vedder is trying to say with my lyrics there?
I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, Teresa has a theory about her lyrics.
Well, Teresa said you have a story in your head.
I did. Do you want to hear my story?
I would love to.
So I think that Eddie Vedder is in love with this girl named Hannah, and Hannah is with this guy named Carmine. And
wait, what's the guy's name? I laughed over Carmine.
Carmine.
Okay.
It is. And he's trying to get Hannah to leave Carmine. And she's saying she's going to leave, but he sees them out on a front porch and they just wave. And so she's not going to leave him. He's very sad. It makes more sense later when we get to other verses. You'll see more of the Carmine will show up more.
Why are these the names that you...
Because it's what I heard.
Okay.
Hannah whispered, gonna leave her Carmine. That's what I had.
Is that verse one?
Yes, when you said, damn the rayside on a leaf of gum.
Damn the rayside.
And I said, on a waiting, on a wasted way, yeah.
Yeah. It's on a weave, on a way set, on a way, yeah.
My brain heard.
Does he just, he just says, I said, like nine times in this verse.
The only thing I know he's saying is, I said.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, that's all he's got.
Can I tell you, too, that every time I hear this song and I sing along to it, the only real words I'm positive of are like, box in a bag?
Yes.
I always like be like, blah, 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 in a box or a bag.
I always felt like it was, now I didn't type this because these aren't the official lyrics, but like he's saying it like, I don't know whether I'm the boxer or the bag.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is an analogy that makes sense to me, even though that's clearly not what Eddie Vedder wrote when he wrote this song, because I know what to wear, the boxers or a bag.
Also has some logic to it.
I mean, it does.
Maybe he only had dirty boxers or a clean bag to choose from.
Or maybe he had a filthy bag and clean boxers.
Maybe everything was
clean. Who knows?
I mean, there is another meaning for bag when you're thinking about where boxers go.
Hey-o. But you're just gonna wear your bag? Head around town? I mean,
who knows? Maybe he's finding Hannah and Carmine. Now, one of the live versions I listened to, what he says in the live version, he talks, it's really more about somebody dying, and he said he's coming home in a box or a bag.
Right.
Which makes so much sense.
So evidently, Eddie Vedder said once upon a time, this was actually, he addressed this at a concert back in 2008. This was at the Prudential Center in Newark. A fan had asked him what the lyrics were, and he didn't tell the fan what the lyrics were, but he did explain the song of the lyrics. And evidently, it was a story about a friend of his in Seattle, like this grunge kid that, you know, he was friends with, whose brother served during the first Gulf War and ended up dying. So Eddie Vedder described this as an anti-patriotic song. And so the song is about like a walk that he took with his friend after he found out his brother had passed away. So the letter, it came in a yellow envelope and was on the porch. And that was the letter that notified the family that the brother had died during the war.
Oh, boy.
So Eddie Vedder also said to the fan, quote, wait, you mean there's lyrics? that's important to note when thinking of like the lyrics and tone of the song. Mm-hmm. So it we'll say for the sake of argument that the person who died's name was Carmine.
Then the live version where I actually understood the words Carmine was not involved at all. Come up.
No, not once.
There's no Carmine
But I believe one of the live versions that was like recorded and released, it said something like, I don't know if my brother's coming home in a box or in a bag.
Yep. That's what I heard in the live one. So he enunciated much clearer when he said live than this demo version. But again, it's a demo.
I feel confident that if our friend lead singer of my band, Steven, listens to this episode, he's going to scream at his radio where I've gotten the lyrics wrong. So
everywhere, maybe?
No. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
You think
I got the words I said, and I want to leave it again? You think I got those wrong? No way. And now they're official.
I think we're spot on with the box or a bag. And the one thing that I'll say is very clear in the song, even though the lyrics aren't, is the anguish. Like, I mean, I know I think about that story, but the way he performs it, like the vocals on it are super emotional.
Yeah.
And then move you. Like, it almost doesn't matter what the words are. So if I imagine someone who's just like working out like a melody and the emotion behind the melody and sort of like improvising the words, you know, some phrases are going to make sense maybe with what's going on in his mind, and some are just going to be like filler, you know, just filling up the space.
So evidently the guitar player, Mike McCready, he wrote on the liner notes to Lost Dogs, which was released in 2003, and it was a rarities album that this song appeared on. He wrote, quote, "Eddie started making up words on the spot, and we kept them. I still don't know what it's about, and I don't want to. I love it. Fans love it, too." So whatever Eddie Vedder is saying, which a lot of the time is probably just like mumbly nonsense, it's here to stay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at that time, especially like right when they first got together and started performing and recording and doing all that stuff, he was really working through a lot of personal issues that came through in his lyrics so much that like later on, he said he took some of his personal stuff out of it because people like knew too much about it. He didn't realize how big they were going to be. And he's like, everybody has like every part of me. So, I mean, the song Alive tells the story of how he found out that the guy he thought he was his father was not his real father. That his real father was this other guy that he met a few times in his life who died before he could find out who his father was. So he was like dealing with a lot of anguish. If you listen to the song Release, oh my God, that song is heartbreaking when he talks about like, just like the pain that he's going through. And when they first started playing Release and they were like rehearsing it, he had to leave the room and just go cry because that's how much emotion he put into what he was doing. So Katie, when you're feeling the emotion in this song, that's how he sang. That's what he did when he still does when he performs.
I forget what the story was, but also the song Black. That was another song that because it was like it was written about like just a very personal thing. Oh, I forget what the story was behind it, but it was something like he refused to like discuss it in interviews or something like that.
How does that song go? I know
that's the one that I always confuse with this song. And then it like the chorus is, "And I what it was everything."
I love that song.
That song's great. The beginning of it, I think, sounds so much like the beginning of this song.
Did you listen to it right after listening to this song today?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Is that also the one that starts,
That's Vedder noise, by the way.
I'm thinking of another song, actually, too, but that's okay.
But you know the song.
Black?
Yeah.
Is Black the one that has lyrics,
I know someday you'll have a beautiful
life. I know I'll be the one.
You'll be the star and somebody else's
everything.
No, but this line is so beautiful. He's like, I know someday you'll
be the sun in somebody else's sky.
A beautiful life. I know you'll be the sun in somebody else's sky, but why can't it be mine?
Yeah.
Oh, that is like.
And when he sings so that fun. "Why can't it be mine" part, he really like elongates it, and it just, I don't know, breaks your heart.
So I do want to say like. Eddie Vedder, like, is a remarkable talent that he can just, like, one, that he can write in the ways that we just described other songs that he writes, but two, that he can improvise this nonsense that actually means something and have, like, I'd say a solid 60% of it makes sense.
On a first go.
On a first go.
So, and how old was he in 1992?
He was probably in his early 20s, right?
Yeah.
That's some, like, young dude. Improvising his brilliance.
Yeah, so way to go.
We're gonna just slaughter it, I guess.
Eddie Vedder is amazing.
Well, if you thought Eddie Vedder was a good lyricist, you should read my work here.
Well, why don't we? Do we do the chorus next or do we do the second verse and save the chorus?
No, let's do the chorus next. Let's just go through the song top to bottom.
All right. Why don't we hear your chorus?
You want me to go?
If you want to, or do you?
Yeah, no, I'll go. Okay. That's fine. It's perfect. So.
Okay. It's perfect.
Hey, yeah. Can you see that? Ooh, on the porch. I get away. I see them on the front way. And I know when I know. I don't want to say, and then he in spoken word before the guitar solo, sticky rice.
What? You wrote that to be funny.
It's what he says. Do you want me to pull up the video? I wonder if
Because what he says before the guitar solo is
sticky
one of
rice.
The only things I'm certain about in the whole song.
And it's not sticky and rice. It's
not sticky rice.
Yeah.
I wonder if you think the same thing I thought, Katie. I can't wait to.
I feel like that part is very clear.
What on earth do you think it is?
Well, we'll wait. We'll wait. One at a time. Now, do you want to try to play this for us? And then, Teresa, you could read yours next if you want to.
Typing on the keyboard of a PC is very challenging. Teresa, can you hear this?
I can see an ad. I can't hear it, though.
Make me cry.
Of course it's make me cry.
Sticky rice.
Make me cry. That's what I wrote, too.
And then it goes into this incredible emotional guitar solo.
The guitar solo is phenomenal.
Mike McCready's music.
Yeah, it has often been compared to Jimi Hendrix. It has a very, like, Jimi Hendrix sound to it. All of the guitar work really kind of sounds like Little Wing.
No.
I was just saying it reminiscent of Little Wing by Hendrix. But again, it's like a very, like, bluesy guitar sound, so that makes sense. Like, it has a blues rock tone. Now, there was more to this story that I think relates to this chorus more so than the verse.
Should we share our...
Oh, you definitely should. I'll get back
to
that.
And then we'll get to the story?
Yeah. Do you want to read your chorus?
Yeah, I can go ahead. I think there's going to be more parallel between Teresa and yours than there is with mine, because I feel like I've had some epiphanies.
If there's no sticky rice, then there's no parallels. It's like an all or nothing thing here. So sticky rice.
So there's the Eddie Vedder noise, the like, yeah. And then can you see them? And then I have, oh, no. Boys, but I think you're right about the porch, but it sounded like boys to me before. And I had, but they don't wait. But I also think you're right. I think it's, but they don't wave. I see them on the porch, but they don't wave. But I had, that they were boys and they don't wait. I see them five different ways. Yeah.
Five different ways.
and I know I don't wanna. I had say and stay. I couldn't decide. And then make me cry.
Mm. Okay. Teresa?
All right. I had, yeah. Can you see them out on the porch? And I give them a wave. I see them round the front way. And I know. I don't want to stay. Make me cry.
Okay. So the continuation of this story is that while Eddie Vedder and his friend are out on their walk, they spotted a house that had like an American flag on the front porch. Now this friend, you know, his brother had just passed away, and so they like stopped and they were just kind of like looking at the flag, and evidently the friend like gestured to the flag as if he was going to salute, but there was an old couple sitting on the porch that just gave them dirty looks because they're these two grungy alternative kids. Even though they were trying to, you know, be reverent. And so they just glared at him disapprovingly the entire time. So knowing that story, I can see why you would want, Katie, your lyrics to be correct, even though my lyrics are correct.
Wait, my lyrics were definitely the ones that were wrong. My lyrics were, oh, no, boys, but they don't wait.
Oh, no,
boys, but
good,
they don't
well, good
wait.
Thing. Good thing I got them right.
I see them five different ways.
Five different ways.
No, it's not my lyrics that are right. I'm not claiming rightness.
We get it. Teresa, what were yours again?
I said, can you see them out on the porch? And I give them a wave. I see them round the front way. And I know. I don't want to stay. Make me want to cry. Or make me cry.
Sticky rice.
I do think it's I don't want to stay. And we all said that. And it kind of makes sense with the porch thing. Like, they don't wave back.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
Now, when I listen to the live version, it sounds like he's saying, and I don't understand.
Maybe he is.
Which, maybe in the live version, he's saying, I don't understand. But it definitely, when I heard the other version, it sounds like I don't want to stay. So, who knows?
Does Mike know what he thinks are the words to
Mike
this?
Mike doesn't know any words. Mike, do you know words?
I've heard him speak. I know he knows words. Like,
he's nearby. I can hear him walking around. Now he's silent.
Yeah. What's his favorite Pearl Jam song?
He loves the song Release. That might be his favorite. That pumps him up a
that's
lot.
That's off the same album, right? That's off 10?
Yeah.
How does that one go?
They called it a drone jam.
Okay. That means absolutely nothing to the rest of us.
You're the heard, heard at home.
Okay.
Release me.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I got it. I just don't do song titles. I just don't know song titles.
And honestly, so many Pearl Jam songs, you can't get the titles don't match anyway. Like, what is Yellow Ledbetter?
Well, now we know.
Oh, well, okay. So this is fun. because we don't have like an official answer to that. But there are several rumors. One is that the title was so we're talking about the yellow letter that was on the porch notifying the friend about his older brother's death. But the title was evidently also derived, this is again a rumor, from Eddie Vedder's old friend Tim Leadbetter. Then the other rumor is it was derived by the blues singer Leadbelly, whose name was Huddy Leadbetter, or it was based on the tongue twister Red Better, Yellow Better, which was supposed to be an inside joke because the lyrics are just incomprehensible. Now, none of these have been substantiated. I should make that absolutely clear because some jackass is going to send us a letter like, you should have looked more into this because it was there for, no. But like the fact of the matter is like, it is not substantiated anywhere why the name of the song is Yellow Leadbetter. However, there are many fan theories about why the song is called that.
I didn't know Leadbelly's name, like his last name was Leadbetter.
Yeah, that's how he got the nickname.
It makes sense. So, I didn't know where the nickname came from.
I also thought that the tongue twister was red leather, yellow leather.
Right. That's the one I've heard. But again, yeah. Like these are just rumors. And so like anybody can post this stuff online and then I can look it up as information for a podcast. So
Brad is saying, come at me, bro. I already said it's just a rumor. I'm saying
don't waste your time coming at me because I'm not going to respond.
Actually, yeah, he's saying don't at me.
Yeah, or whatever. Like, I just won't pay attention. I don't care. Like, so those are evidently the several reasons given in my research when I was looking it up for the name Yellow Leadbetter. I think, honestly, like, who cares?
Who cares?
For some reason, we all know the name of this song. Regardless, like, we all know this song is called, it's like, we all know the song is called Song 2, you know? It doesn't matter. Like,
Teresa, do you know that song?
Blur. No. Oh, God damn it, Teresa.
We all know this, except for Teresa.
Teresa.
It's the Blur song. Woo!
Oh, okay. I didn't know the name of that song.
Yeah, I know that now. You've just made that abundantly clear. And there goes my point. But anyway, everybody knows this song is Yellow Leadbetter, unless you're confusing it with the first part of the song Black.
Which is possible.
Which is definitely possible. Katie, do you want to read verse 3 after we get through one of the greatest guitar solos of all time?
Can we just pause and focus on the fact that really is one of the greatest guitar solos
really
of all
time.
It really
is. It's tremendous.
I don't care about guitar solos. And no offense,
no,
everybody.
No, I hear you. I as a guitar player, people always think I'm going to love like somebody who shreds on the guitar. But I often feel like a guitar solo should be as memorable as any hook or any chorus, you know?
And this is, and it's beautiful. It's just beautiful. And then, like, when he comes out of the guitar solo, I don't even know how to describe the sound he makes, but he, like, sort of sings a little bit, like, as the guitar solo.
Eddie Vedder, when he comes in with that, like, falsetto kind of thing. Yeah.
And it sounds like he's saying, I say or I see.
It's probably said, I say.
See? It's probably said, I said, I say.
I should throw this in here also. In 2007, Guitar World magazine ranked this number 95 of the 100 greatest guitar solos of all time.
I think that is too far away from number one. Yeah.
Well, you can write your own list.
I will. And I'll put it at number one, but I really don't know that many guitar solos. Yeah.
You have your top three guitar solos that you remember.
Do I know other ones?
I'm sure you would probably put a Clapton song on there.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Okay. There would have to be several Claptons.
Badge. There's a guitar solo in the song Badge.
Okay, great.
So that's, I don't know.
You
they,
did it.
They can so this tie is, for first.
This is one of the top two greatest guitar solos, according to
a person who can
Katie
only
Whitley,
think of two guitar solos.
2020. Perfect. You nailed it.
Oh, Sweet Child of Mine has a good guitar solo.
Is it coming in at a distant third? It's Yellow Leadbetter, followed by Badge, followed by Sweet Child of Mine.
No, it's a tie for first.
Tie
and
for
then,
first, and then distant third.
Yeah.
Slash.
Yeah.
Some kind of Eric Clapton in there somewhere.
Yeah. And no, Eric Clapton is the song Badge.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good. I didn't know.
Teresa, do you have any thoughts on the guitar solo? That are going to top mine?
I wrote down on this one that the intro was like one of the best guitar intros ever. And the solo is amazing. But yeah, I couldn't name you
the
five. Guitar.
So here's the anomaly to me about this music is that it is kind of at its core, it's the same three chords over and over again. It's so remarkably simple. It's just like your standard like blues riff. You know, a 1-5-4 blues riff, but he plays it in such a way that's like so memorable. Like if you play those opening notes, do 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 do, like that is instantaneously recognizable, and it's just three chords. It's just E B A, just a simple pentatonic riff, nothing crazy, and yet like. It nails it. Way to go, Mike McCready.
Yeah. He's not even one of the founding members, well, I guess of Pearl Jam, but there was
no, he was part of Mookie Blaylock.
He was, but yeah. He wasn't with Mother Love Bone, which is before Mookie Blaylock.
Oh, okay.
Mother Love Bone was with their original singer, Andy Wood, who died of a drug overdose.
When did Stone Gossard come in?
Stone Gossard and Jeff Ament and...
I thought Jeff Ament... Because Jeff Ament wrote the music to this song with Mike McCready, but I thought he was also a part of Mookie Blaylock.
He was. No, he was... So the original... So Jeff Ament and Stone Gossard are the original two guys. They had another singer. They were like a hair metal band, really.
Nice. Like, oh, sick.
Like if you see video of like their original singer, you're like, oh, this guy is like trying to be Axl Rose, trying to be all those guys at the time with like,
oh, you know, yeah.
So Andy Wood died of a drug overdose. So then they were looking for a new singer and Mike McCready came in and they had demos of like the music out there and Eddie Vedder heard their demo tape and he recorded his voice over it, sent it to them. He was in California, sent it to them in Seattle. And they were like, this guy's voice is ridiculous. We have to get him. And that's when they had Mookie Blaylock, but then they got in trouble for Mookie Blaylock.
What is a Mookie Blaylock? Is that a band name?
That was
is
their
that a
name
person?
Before Pearl Jam. Their name was Mookie Blaylock.
Okay.
And he was a basketball player.
Oh.
His number was 10.
Oh.
And that's
so
that's
now it's
why,
it's all making sense now.
That's why the first album is named 10. It's like in honor of Mookie Blaylock, but they got in trouble and they were like, you can't use his name for the name of your band.
Well, I hear that. If somebody named their band Mookie Wilson, I'd be pissed.
Mookie Wilson was a Mets player.
Oh, okay.
86 Mets.
For a few minutes, you two have just been talking about things I had no context for. And also, like, a lot of them are, you know, like, you were like, Mookie Blaylock and Stone Bagless or whatever his name was.
Stone Bagpipes?
Stone Bagpipes. I said Stone Bagless, but Stone Bagpipes is better.
I don't know if I'm a boxer or a bagless, if I'm a Stone Bagless.
Bilbo Baggins. I just had no idea what you two were talking about.
It was all a secret code. Katie, how much did you think Teresa and I were going to talk about sports on this episode? Yeah?
If you had asked me before the episode, if you had said, like, I'll bet you $100... that
what to
talk
people,
about sports, I would have been like, there's no way you're talking about sports. You're gonna owe me $100. And I would have been wrong. I'd have to pay you $100.
Yeah, which I could use. I mean,
I'm glad that we didn't make
tough
that
times
bet, though.
It's a pandemic. I'm unemployed,
Brad. So. I will give you $100 any day.
Nice. I don't even have to talk about sports to do it. It's very cool. Very cool.
In fact, I'll give you $100 not to talk about sports any
done.
Day.
Any day. Every day?
A shake on it.
Every day?
Every day.
Every day.
Brad's making $100 a day just to not talk about sports, which Great. Is easy because he doesn't even like them.
This is a very lucrative position I'm in here. So
Just wait until it's NCAA basketball North Carolina is playing, and then you'll be sad you can't talk about sports.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. Will they play is the question.
He might be safe.
Who knows
season.
Where we'll be in March.
It'll be a different kind of madness.
Different. Oh, but
terrible
it.
Joke.
Yes.
Also, like, your money lives with my money. Like, I'll give you $100 a day. Yeah. not a big deal.
But you'll also take $100.
Mm-hmm.
We have another verse to discuss here.
We do.
Who's,
it's
Katie,
my turn.
It's you? Yeah.
Except I've got some variations here. I'll do my best. So when he comes out of the guitar solo, I think he says, I see, I don't know, but it's something else. And then, I'm a coming on the way.
Yeah.
Or on a comet on a wave, or I'm becoming more aware. I don't know.
I like that one.
So since Teresa likes it, I'll go with I'm becoming more aware. I said I don't know where there's a box or a bag.
Teresa, what do you have for that verse?
Okay, so I have, oh, I see, I don't know, but there's something here. Great, great line.
No, that's close, though.
To you, but not to the official version.
I understand.
Yeah.
They said, on a carmine, on a wave.
There it is. There it is. That's
back. On a carmine, on a wave. I said, oh, I don't know where there's a box or a bag.
Well, okay. So we have one of the characters of this song that you've invented.
Carmine. He's back.
Do we ever meet Hannah? Like, where did you come up with that name?
Yeah, where did Hannah come from?
Hannah whispered, gonna leave her carmine. It's up there.
That's right. Sorry, I forgot.
Oh.
So Teresa and I, in that first part, both had something like, I had, I don't know, but it's something else. And you had, I don't know, but it's something here.
Yeah, but there, I don't know, but there's something there.
Well, you're both wrong, because the real newly official version is, ah, see, I don't incoherent, something else. On a gummin' on a way. Ah, Zed, I don't want to wear a boxer or a bag. Don't you see? Don't you get it?
Sure.
Your lyrics just say incoherent.
Yeah, well.
I don't incoherent.
Officially. I don't incoherent something else.
But we all had the word something. And Brad and I both had something else.
My favorite thing about Google Docs is the fact that way is incorrectly spelled according to them, but onagummon onagummon is perfectly good English, as they say, and also on a weave and on a way set on a way. Yeah, those are all not misspelled. Whoa, I have whoa down here. If you see that, whoa is misspelled according to Google Docs.
But on a gummin' on a
on
way.
On a gummin' on a way. Way incorrect.
On a gummin' on a way.
I still think it's on a comet or a wave.
Perfectly playable Scrabble words.
So,
I like on a comet on a wave. What was the other one that you had that was
I'm becoming better? More aware.
I'm becoming more aware. I think that it doesn't, I don't think it sounds like that, but I like the line better.
Oh, you like that line better than on a comet on a wave?
Yeah,
I like the sound of on a comet on a wave.
I do, but that sounds very rusted root.
On a comet on a wave.
It sounds like it should be part of Send Me on My Way.
Well, that's another song that has
gibberish words. Yeah.
As we've previously discussed, that's another incomprehensible song.
Right.
Which one's a better incomprehensible song? This one, right?
This 100,000 times. I love Send Me on My Way. Always puts me in a good mood. It is musical Prozac. This is a better song.
Yes.
Hands down.
Now, in Brad's lyrics, he just wrote chorus, like for the repeat of the chorus. But I went through the chorus again, and my second round with the chorus is not exactly the same as the first.
Oh, well, please share it with the class, Katie.
Well, Teresa, do you want to share your version first?
Sure, why not? I said, okay.
No, you can't, wait, hold on. Was I said part no. of the, okay, I'm just clarifying for obvious reasons.
Let me reset. Ah, yeah, can you see them out on the void? And I give them a wave. I see them round the front way. And I know, I don't want to stay. No, no, I don't want to stay. Repeat, repeat. I don't want to stay.
He doesn't say sticky rice that time.
No sticky rice.
This time he doesn't say it. It's the O's and the O's and the woes, but no sticky rice.
No sticky rice.
So I have, oh yeah.
Right.
Can you see them? Oh, no, no, boys. Yeah, but they don't wave. I see them round about my way. Yeah. And I know, I don't want to stay. I don't want to stay. I don't want to stay. Elongated falsetto bit. I don't want to stay. I don't. Times two.
Perfect. And then there's the long guitar outro, which is, you know, basically the intro as well. So this song clocks in at like five minutes and 12 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a particularly wordy song.
Oh, no.
Some of these are words, I will say. But it's I think it's a great song because of the music.
Oh, yeah.
Because we talked about the guitar solo. We talked about the intro we talked about before. The outro, just as good.
I think we have to count his vocals as an instrument in right. the song.
Yeah. I would yeah. agree with that. I would say they are treated like they are another instrument in this orchestral piece. And it's excellent. It's tremendous. Now, there are other rumors about this song that, quote, I don't know why I say quote. There are other rumors about this song, such as he doesn't know the words, which I think might be like absolutely true. He kind of knows what he's saying, but like he doesn't like really know the words, even after, you know, 20, how many years of singing this? 30, almost 30
years, 28 years.
And the other rumor that I've heard is that he was super hammered when he recorded it, which it sounds like he's super hammered. Teresa, can you tell us, does Eddie Vedder have a history of imbibing a little too much?
Oh, yeah. Eddie, yeah. He likes his wine. Yeah. He brings like a bottle on stage with him. I don't know if he still does, but he used to. And there were, yeah, he would get kind of drunk in the earlier years, but I don't think he does that as much now. He might bring it on here, but he's not crazy anymore. I mean, he was insane on stages. If you look at footage from like the Lollapalooza tour, like when they were first starting, he'd climb up like the scaffolding and the lighting rigs and then just like jump out into the crowd, stage diving.
Well, do you guys remember the video for Even Flow? He did that exact thing. That's like the entire like last half of the video is like Eddie Vedder just like climbing, like you said, climbing the scaffolding and then like diving into the crowd.
So dangerous. That is like that is the most extreme trust fall.
Which we say as almost 40-year-olds, but he was, you know, 22 at the time.
Yeah.
You feel invincible, especially if you've got your bottle of wine out there, which
I was never
make you feeling more invincible.
Cool enough to climb up high and jump into a crowd of strangers.
Oh, I mean, I was always a super nerd who was out of shape, so I wasn't I wasn't climbing. I never had the upper body strength to climb scaffolding, like even when I was most invincible at that age.
I didn't even like the theater exercise of like a trust fall where you're relatively close to the ground. As like a teenager, I was like, I don't know. These people are my best friends, but I don't think I trust them.
Teresa, were you stage diving at that age?
No. But I could trust fall like
a
nobody.
Mofo. Yeah.
I've heard there, you know, rumors about your trust fall abilities are fantastic.
My youth group trust falls were phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. Great trust falls. One time in a youth group, I went to a ropes course somewhere. Oh, man. I was so good at falling. So good at it.
But if you watch the other guys in the band while Eddie Vedder is climbing and hanging and acting like it's monkey bars, he's on
right.
a light
yes.
string.
Yes.
Like they're monkey bars. He's just like swinging like it's nothing. And Mike McCready and Stone Gosser and Jeff Ament are like, what the hell is going on? Oh my God, he's going to die. He's going to die.
And whoever the drummer is.
Oh, so many drummers. So many drummers.
Have either of you tried to do monkey bars as an adult?
I've never done it in my life.
So before we got married, we went to it wasn't monkey bars, but it was like
a chin up
bar. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pull up thing.
We had gone to, where was it?
Brookdale
Park. And they have like the exercise station set up like around the trail. And one of our friends, I forget who, was like doing, no, there was like an old man doing pull ups. And so one of our friends said, like, Brad, go do a pull-up. And I said, like, I can't do a pull-up. And she said, go do a pull-up anyway. And I said, okay, because, you know, brains. And so
okay.
I went up there and I did one pull-up and my shoulder, like, immediately dislocated. It didn't actually dislocate.
And we were
like,
in our 20s.
It,
like we
popped.
Were in our 20s when this happened.
So this is, that was when I was in the best shape of my life. by the way. I want to just point that out right there. But no, monkey bars are not for adults. They are for children and monkeys.
And for any veteran in his 20s who was like, oh, I can do anything. I've had a bottle of wine. I
still consider a person in their 20s to be a child.
Yeah, but you were in your 20s when you did this.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not wrong.
I know.
So I may have been 30.
No, it was before we got married.
I got married. We were 31.
You were.
I was 31.
We're not the same age.
You son of a bitch.
Anywho's. He must have been very in shape.
Yeah.
Or, you know, though, like, you remember when you used to get real drunk, like, as a 20-something? Allegedly, not any of us, but, like, no. Other people did.
I didn't start getting real drunk till I was in my, like, mid-30s.
Oh, okay.
So.
I'm just saying when other people, not us, get really drunk, you know how they get, like, extra strong, too?
Yeah.
So maybe that's what was going on.
Mm. Maybe.
I think the size of the crowd too, like,
ooh, adrenaline
is like a big adrenaline like booster.
Yeah,
So, I mean, that those crowds were insane.
Teresa,
at concerts.
I've played to crowds nearly 1/20th that size, and it's an invigorating experience.
I can't imagine it, you know, how invigorating it is to play to, like, you know, a club size and then that insane numbers. So you're like, of course I could do anything. This crowd loves me. I am their god.
Oh, I can't tell you how awesome it is when, like, a bar is busy and I'm playing there.
I'm bringing, like, monkey bars to the next busy bar.
We're
going to see what happens. It's not going to happen for a long time. What bar is going to be busy indoors? You won't be there. But
the next time we have, like, an outdoor gig that's warm enough to play outdoors again, we'll set up, like, a trellis.
Maybe it'll be near the park.
Brad has taken up using the resistance bands during this COVID nightmare.
My arms are getting shapely.
So... when it's warm enough for outdoor, warm and safe for outdoor gigs, I'll bring the monkey bars and we'll see what happens when the adrenaline gets going.
Also, another thing I've been doing is building up a big fat tummy. And so, so that's going to work. That's going to work against me. Is my big fat tummy.
Well, you got 6 months to train.
I've been wearing nothing but jammy pants since March. And so I haven't realized, like, how big my waist has gotten. I've been fighting my jeans when I've had to leave the house. It's I had to stop wearing a belt for some time. So these are all things that I'm pleased to record.
Teresa is thriving in this environment. She already didn't like leaving the house.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, what? In the weight gain? I definitely am thriving.
No, I did not mean it like that. I would never say such
I'll tell you
shitty
what,
thing
Teresa
to you.
Hated having to come here to record the podcast.
No, that's not true. That's not true. Love going to people's houses. I am a homebody, so I'm fine with being, although not being able to leave, like, at all is a little overwhelming. So, not
it's only going to get worse.
That's right.
Oh, thank you.
Hey,
Mr. Grimm. Hey.
Good times, guys. Good times, right?
I'm talking about Pearl Jam drummers.
No.
My favorite story is one of their drummers got a Pearl Jam tattoo, and they were like, you probably shouldn't have done that. And then they fired him.
Oh.
That's dickish.
How
much do you think you would know about Pearl Jam were it not for Mike?
I mean, my brother, I learned a lot from my brother, Matt.
Yeah.
Like, I remember going to Best Buy with my brother, Matt. At one point, Pearl Jam was releasing bootlegs of all their concerts. And so we were going through at Best Buy, going through all the CDs, looking for the concerts he had been to.
Okay.
To try, because he wanted to buy the bootleg of that concert. So I did know things from Matt for sure. I know a lot more because of Mike. I was telling Katie, I don't know if it was on before, so cut this out if it was, but I was telling Katie before that when Mike and I first started dating and I knew how much he loved Pearl Jam, I read a Pearl Jam biography. Five Against One is the name of it.
That makes me want to barf a little bit.
I think it's so sweet.
It is.
Was it good? Like, would you recommend it?
I liked learning about how the band started and like some of their problems they had with each other and whatnot. Watch their documentary 20. You learn all the same things, and the music is mixed in video, so it's more interesting, I think.
And who likes reading?
Not me. But like Mike, he's like a fan of the fan club. He's a part of the fan club. Oh, yeah. You know, he gets the special record releases that come out as part of that. You know, you have, for God's sakes, you have the album 10 framed in your bathroom.
It is. Yeah, that's just a it's not the actual album, but it looks like
it's the album cover.
Yeah.
With like a track listing on it.
The Pearl Jam is great to their fans, though. Like, before they release tickets to the public, they release tickets to their fan club at a much, like, lower price.
That's always been their thing. Like, I remember they broke away from Ticketmaster in, like, the mid-90s because they got tired of, like, just the absurd surcharges that came along with getting something from Ticketmaster.
They had to like testify at before Congress about like antitrust stuff for Ticketmaster, and one of the things that like Stone Gossard said, he said, you know, I feel bad for these kids, they don't have $30 to be spending on a concert. And I was like, oh, if concerts were $30, can you imagine?
I know,
you get me, Pearl Jam. You get me.
I keep thinking about grading this song, and I feel like I can't. Like, no, I don't think, like, I don't think it's appropriate.
Can you grade my song?
I think we all get an A for effort.
Yay!
Yay! A for effort.
What about for content?
I don't know. It just like there isn't.
They're
enough.
All Fs, so we get solid Cs.
You know what though? Like, if I think about this as an improvisation,
yeah.
I mean, not that, but would you grade an improvisation? I don't know. It's an A. Like, it's a fantastic song. I can't fault it, even though it doesn't make sense, but I have no scale to grade it on, so I'd rather, like, not assign it a grade.
I want to tell you my favorite thing about this song is that, evidently, Pearl Jam often performs it live as their closer, mm-hmm. and they turn on the house lights, and they let the crowd sing along with it.
I love that.
I do love it, because can you imagine what that sounds like?
Amazing.
It sounds amazing. I've been there. It's great.
Just having like 25,000 people all at once just going, on a coming, on a way. On a weave, on a way, sit, on a way.
On a comet, on a wave.
It's, I think, amazing. That is a ballsy choice for a band to say, like, let's take our most unintelligible song and just have everybody sing it at once.
It sounds like the most fun, though.
Oh, yes, I bet it's a blast.
Like, let's do a sing-along. It doesn't matter. Know it. Let's do it.
I've seen a bunch of drunks try to sing this when it plays on a jukebox at a bar, and I think that's magnificent.
Steven, lead singer of every band, Grand Theft Audio.
Thank you for the plug. No by problem. The way, we're not playing any gigs right now because there are no gigs. COVID.
But he sang it at one of your socially distant outdoor gigs.
Oh, this is one of our acoustic gigs that we did. Yeah.
And that was just kind of on a whim. You guys were like, oh, let's do Yellow Ledbetter. I don't know what he sang, but I loved it.
So he, you know, like I said before, like, loves Pearl Jam. And I think he has the right kind of voice for Eddie Vedder songs. Like, it just, like, fits perfectly in there.
It does.
And so he knows every sound that Eddie Vedder makes, whether or not he knows what the word is.
It sounded incredibly accurate for a song that has, like, no set words. Yeah.
But this is a song that people just feel.
Absolutely.
I think it's awesome. Sorry, Teresa, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, you were saying that they end the show with the sing-along of everybody joining in and being there. And then that guitar solo, the rest of the band just walks off stage and Mike McCready is just standing there, like, destroying.
Yeah.
In his own world, doing his own thing. It's just, it's great. It's a great song.
Do you have a favorite Pearl Jam song?
I was actually trying to think of that. And there's so many that come on and I'm like, oh, this one's really good. Today, my favorite Pearl Jam song is Rearview Mirror.
Okay. What album?
What album is that on? Yeah. Oh, God.
I don't think I know the song. That's why I'm asking.
Saw things so much clearer. Saw things.
Don't
see.
Know
I don't know what song.
I know Rearview Mirror was the name of their greatest hits album that they put
really
out. Yeah.
I have no idea what album that's on. It just came on today.
Because this made it onto their greatest hits album. I should also note that, like, even though it wasn't ever on an album, it was still one of their greatest hits.
What is the song that's like, all five horizons
Nirvana. That's Black.
Oh, that is Black. Yeah. That's my favorite Pearl Jam song.
Okay. I would still go Daughter. I would say Daughter, I think, is my favorite.
Rearview Mirror's on Versus.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Which was the same album that had Daughter on it.
Yes.
It was like, I think it was like 10 Versus and then
Vitalogy.
Yeah. Which had the worst Pearl Jam song, by the way, Bugs.
Oh, it's terrible. That song is so bad.
I don't know it.
I'll play it for you later. It's like, it's weird for the sake of being weird.
Now,
yeah, there's a few songs on Vitalogy that are like that.
My mom and I used to listen to the radio driving to school in the morning, and there was a Pearl Jam song that she would always say, like, no, this is the one where you don't know anything they're saying, but I don't think it was Yellow Ledbetter.
It could probably even flow.
Maybe.
Aside from rest his head on a pillow made of concrete, I don't know any of the words in that song.
Which also is great.
Okay, can I ask? I really think these are the words, and now I'm not so sure. Isn't it even flow? Thoughts arise like butterflies.
Thoughts arrive, but
arrive.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Then I feel right. Okay. I got nervous for a second. I was like, what do you mean people don't know what the words of even flow are?
Well, there's verses, too, that get very confusing.
No, get out of here. There's only a chorus. So
get out of here.
Get out of here.
Better man, you know, it says can't find a better man.
Yeah.
My father-in-law, who is Italian, thought it was an Italian song and thought he was saying che fa per me, which means what do you do for me? Che fa per me.
So on the same album, they had the song Better Man and Nothing Man. I used to love Nothing Man, but I think now I would opt for Better Man over that.
Yeah, I agree. The song Corduroy is great, too.
And Corduroy is a lot of fun.
But Corduroy is a good song. I also like Glorified G, but it sounds...
I forgot about that song. This is because they didn't put out videos for a long time.
Yeah. Well, because of Jeremy.
Is that why they stopped putting out videos?
Yeah, because MTV censored them.
I remember that, like, there was a lot of controversy about that.
Yeah,
but that MTV video is also one of the greatest videos of all time. Like,
MTV, I think, would only play it after a certain time or something like that.
Right.
Or wanted them to put, like, a disclaimer on it. And they were like, well, forget it. We're not doing videos anymore.
Well, they wouldn't appear in videos because they still did, like, an animated video for Do the Evolution. Years later, but it wasn't the same.
That although I acknowledge its greatness as a song, like Jeremy is, it wasn't even in my consideration of like what's your favorite Pearl Jam song.
It's a great song and I like it, but yeah, I agree with you.
Well, they were made fun of for a little while. People would say things about them having these really short titles, like one word titles for their song. So then they put out like elderly woman sitting behind a counter in a small town.
How does that go?
I seem to recognize your face.
That's a great song.
That's an excellent
Pearl Jam's
song.
Great, guys.
Like, yeah. They're amazing.
They're phenomenal.
And I know no song titles.
I think they will go down as one of the best rock bands of all time.
Yeah.
I agree.
So, you know, they've been doing their thing for 30 years now, and they're still putting out good. He was just on Howard Stern, gave a great interview talking about,
Mike's been talking about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With like Chris, he talks about Chris Cornell. He talks about Elderly Woman. And so, like, good for them,
Can I ask Teresa a hard question that has just occurred to me?
I don't think you should.
Oh, okay. Well,
don't do that to your friend.
Do you want to be asked a difficult question? What might be a difficult question? There's no right or wrong answer here. I'm just curious now. Like, Pearl Jam or the Beatles?
The Beatles, definitely.
Really?
Beatles is so nostalgic. It's everything I grew up with. But
did they also have like more material?
The Beatles or Pearl Jam?
The Beatles. That's what I'm saying. Like,
a question I don't have an answer to.
Yeah, because I'm not familiar with more modern Pearl Jam albums,
we bought it before quarantine. Pearl Jam's most recent album, Gigaton, and it's good.
Right,
it's like a good album, and I'm like, how is this still happening? So they had a lot more time together than the Beatles. Beatles were only together, 9-10 years?
Right.
I mean, but they're very different. Very different places in my heart. Mike, actually, this is a weird, weird story. But the other day, he was like, you love Jack, my son, more than you love me. Jokingly, he said this. And I was like, I love you differently. It's just, it's different. So that's Beatles and Pearl Jam. I love them differently.
I hope
Mike and Jack don't fight over your love. I hope that they come to a mutual agreement.
We can share her.
You're right about like the whole bands thing, though. It doesn't have to be a one over the other. It can just be a different place in your heart, like you said. Different place of appreciation.
At least we can agree that Pearl Jam is excellent.
Oh, we 100% agree about that.
So. Oh, then there's Temple of the Dog, Hunger Strike. That's also an amazing song. Sorry,
that's a great song.
Chris Cornell and Eddie Vedder singing together. Come on.
Here's the crazy thing, and people have given me shit about this, like friends of mine. Chris Cornell, like I get why people love Chris Cornell. He does not do it for me, though.
That's all right. He's not for everyone.
And so I would rather hear Eddie Vedder singing his part before you get into like screechy Chris Cornell part. Then it just sounds like a Pearl Jam song, though, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Although I think Chris Cornell wrote it, but I could be wrong about that. I don't know the answer.
Well, I don't know the answer either. We'll never know. The answer is we'll never know. It's impossible to ever get that answer.
Someone look it up and then be sure to be really condescending.
I don't want to hear it. Or send that to Teresa. Don't send that to us. That's the thing. I don't care. Do not email us with whatever the answer
is. Teresa episode.
Right. Just send it directly to Teresa Valente at whatever her email address is.
So. Teresa Schmarisha.
Yep. That's
that's accurate. You can find her everywhere.
At Teresa Schmarisha.
Yep. Follow her on Parler. And be as racist as you want to be, by the way.
Let's just be clear. Teresa's not on Parler.
No, I'm not.
Not yet. Not yet.
Don't spread it.
But who knows what tomorrow will bring.
More Pearl Jam. I think it's just going to be a Pearl Jam weekend for me. That's right.
Yeah, man.
Rockapella. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for listening again. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, song suggestions, shoot us an email. We are at decompositionpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @decomp_pod. We are on Instagram and Facebook, Decomposition Podcast. Be sure to get yourself onto Apple Podcasts and drop us a rating. Or honestly, I don't care. If you don't want to rate or review, like, I'm past that.
If you want to say something nice, we'd like to hear it.
Yeah, if you don't, whatever.
Only because it's nice to be nice to each other.
Yeah, whatever. It's 2020. Nobody's nice to anybody. So, in the meantime, thank you guys for listening, and you just chill till the next episode.